Take a minute, let it settle in. You probably never saw it coming. Something's gotta give, so I give up you.
Greetings, greetings. Come on in. I'm pouring the tea once again. This is Carol Moulton, your host of Tea Time with Carol, and we are here once again on Saturday, maybe snowing where you are. Hopefully you're in and nice and cozy and comfortable. But in any event, I'm pouring the tea today and fluffing the pillows and want you to come in and really put your listening ears on, because we've got a special guest today. We've got Dr. L. Ray Matthews, and this one is going to be really good. This one is going to be really, really good. You know, if you've been with me for a while, you know that we've spent a lot of time talking about fear and all the different ways that can come up in your life, and we're gonna maybe touch on that a little bit as we talk to Dr. Matthews. You know, growing up in Mississippi is probably not the easiest place in which to grow up and decide you want to become a doctor. But we're gonna get to all of that. But I just want to ask you, first of all, you know, last week we were talking about the two things that you need in order to keep your New Year's resolutions. And I really want to know how you're doing with those, you know. So if you'd be so kind to give me a hint on Facebook, on Tea Time, or on the Empowerment Radio station on site, and just let me know if you've fallen off the wagon, or if you're still on the wagon, or just where you are in keeping those resolutions. So, but I don't want to belabor it. I want to bring our guest in, because this is going to be a really, really, really fast hour. Dr. Leslie Ray Matthews, and I'm only going to say their first name once because I know he doesn't like it, but Dr. L. Ray Matthews is a native of Indianola, Mississippi. And just now we were trying to figure out how long we've known each other, and we figure it's somewhere between 13, 15, 16 years. So I have seen, and since the day I met him, he has been talking about vitamin D and its benefits. So, you know, and the interesting thing is that when I first met him, nobody was really talking about vitamin D. That was something that was kind of unheard of. You know, if you went to your doctor to get a physical, they really weren't testing for vitamin D. Now everybody's testing. Everybody's looking at vitamin D levels. And that has to do in no small way to the efforts and the work of Dr. Matthews. Dr. Matthews is, and I'm going to tell, I know he won't do it, so I'm going to toot his horn for a minute. He is a scholar and a researcher, and has used his research on his patients in Grady Hospital in Atlanta, Georgia, where he has saved countless lives, people who were clinically dead, people who were in really, really bad accidents. He's been able to have them recover, and not only recover, but walk out of the hospital by using vitamin D and the other items that God has given to him. That is really a miracle. I mean, it's really nothing short of that. I've seen a lot of the research and a lot of the documentation concerning the work that he's done. And it's not only in this country, but also overseas. Dr. Matthews has been inducted into the Royal Society of Medicine, which, you know, top, we're talking Louis Pasteur and Charles Darwin and, you know, scientists of that caliber who are members of that society. He's been inducted into that. He's been invited to speak at the United Nations. He did that, I think, last year. He's spoken before the Congressional Black Caucus. He has spoken. He's been invited to speak in overseas, Dubai, and probably just about every country you can think of. So, but very, very humble brother, you know, very, very humble, but he's got an incredible story. I'm not going to belabor it. I just wanted to give you kind of a little bit of the parameters of who we're going to be talking to today, and I just want to bring him and welcome Dr. Matthews into Tea Time with Carol.
Hi, Carol. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, sure. Thank you. It's my pleasure. You know, I'd like to start at the beginning and give people a little bit of an idea of, you know, who you are and, you know, what made you decide to become a medical doctor? Are you the first doctor in your family, and why did you decide you wanted to be a doctor in the first place?
Well, medicine and minister seems to run in my family. My father was a Baptist minister. My uncle was a Baptist minister who went to school with Martin Luther King at Morehouse. My cousin, Reverend Fred Matthews, was a Baptist minister. So from a family of Baptist ministers, and my great-grandmother and grandmother in Mississippi were both midwives. So I wanted to be a physician since I was 4 years old. That's all I ever wanted to be. So I knew what I was destined to do, you know, from the time I was 4 years old.
Wow. Well, I mean, but what made you, you know, I mean, midwives I can kind of see. Baptist ministers, maybe not so much.
Yeah.
But what was it that kind of sparked it for you that said, yeah, I want to do that?
I think it's just God-given. You know, some people are predestined even before you're born, and you just know from an early age what you're supposed to do.
That's interesting. That's really interesting. So, you studied, went all through undergrad. Where did you go to medical school?
I went to medical school at the University of Mississippi in Jackson, Mississippi, which is Ole Miss, basically. So I went to undergrad at Ole Miss, graduated with a degree in chemistry, and, like I said, medical school at the University of Mississippi in Jackson, Mississippi.
And I know you've done kind of work all over, including at the Mayo. You want to talk a little bit about that and how all that came to be, too?
Yes, I did my fellowship in surgical critical care at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota, and I was on staff for a couple of years as a senior consultant, associate consultant. And then I moved to Atlanta, Georgia in 2007.
Okay. All right. So now what are you doing? I know that you are at Morehouse School of Medicine, and you're also at Grady. Can you talk a little bit about what that looks like for you? What's a typical day?
Sure. Grady is one of the busiest level one trauma centers in the entire United States. Last year we admitted over 4,500 trauma patients, and about 30% of those trauma patients have penetrating injuries, knife wounds, and gunshots. I'm a full professor in the Department of Surgery at Morehouse School of Medicine. I'm also the co-interim director of Surgical Intensive Care Unit. I'm the senior clerkship director for four-field medical students that take the SICU rotation. And I teach nursing students, nurse practitioner students, medical students, and we train young doctors to be surgeons.
That's a lot.
Yeah, that's quite a bit. Keeps me busy. So I work between 80 to 100 hours a week.
Oh, my word. That is soul-crushing, you know.
Yeah.
So I hope you're taking your vitamin D.
Yes,
you know?
Every day. That's the first thing I do in the morning.
Well, speaking of that, can you tell us a little bit about how that came to you? Because you were really the face of vitamin D, you know. So how did that even begin? Where does that come from?
Okay, as far back as medical school, I remember a nutritional lecture. So the doctors don't get a lot of lectures on nutrition. So one of my professors said that all you have to do is eat three meals a day and you'll be healthy. And I was like, well, how are you going to eat three meals a day when health meals and be healthy when 90% of vitamin D is produced by the sun striking your skin? You only get 10% of vitamin D from your diet. So I said, I'm going to prove that one day. And so as far back as medical school, I've always been interested in vitamin D. But, you know, you have to go through residency and a lot of other things. So I kind of had to put it on the back burner until I got time in the early 2000s to actually start working with vitamin D. Well, actually, it's not a vitamin. It's a true hormone. So that's what makes it different from the other vitamins. It actually is the most powerful hormone in your body. You have 30,000 genes in the human body, and vitamin D controls 3,000 out of 30,000 genes, or 10% of your DNA. So anything that controls 10% of your DNA is very powerful. So I figure if this stuff controls 10% of your DNA, what can you do if you learn how to really use it or understand the concepts of it?
And so you started working. So what did that look like? I mean, how did you study it? What did that, what form did that take?
Okay, first of all, I read about 1,000 articles on it. Everything I could get my hands on, I read about vitamin D. So I knew everything, learned everything about its molecular structure, what it does, the actions that it does, the genes that it works on. And then I just started, diagramming, okay, if it works on that, it should be able to affect this. And then, for example, one thing that vitamin D does, it increases your immune response system, or how well your body responds to infections and cancers and bacteria and viruses. So, as a surgeon, we were worried about wound infections all the time. We're worried about patients getting pneumonia. And so that's one of the things. If it works on that, I can get my patients out of the hospital faster, lower my mortality rate, and there's less suffering among the patients, and you can lower hospital costs. And so those are one of the things. Another thing it does, it decreases your inflammatory response. Inflammatory response to things that causes arthritis, the swelling, the phlegm that you get when you get bronchitis and all that. So you can decrease that. You can help patients to do better. So if you can control those two arms, the immune response and inflammatory response system, you can do a lot of different things with it.
So how did you begin testing this after you, read these thousands of articles and, kind of concluded that it affected these two areas? What was the next step for you?
Okay, the next step, you have to get IRB approval or internal board review, or in any institution you work in, you have to get approval from your medical school and hospital to do research. So that's a long, tedious application that you have to fill out in order to get IRB approval. And you have to state specifically what you're going to do, what are your aims, patient population you're wishing to target, what are your primary outcomes, what are your secondary outcomes going to be. And then this application has to be reviewed by your IRB board at your medical school and at your hospital. So after you get approval, it's closely monitored, and you want to design research that does not harm patients at all, first of all. So I knew what the dosages was and learned everything I possibly could about potential side effects or toxicity of it, if that happens, and how to treat it. And so that is how I initially got started. So first thing we did was tested everybody in our ICU, and we found out 98.8% of our patients were vitamin D deficient. And that's almost 100% in sunny Atlanta, where there's a plenty of sun. However, we live in a technology society, so people do not go outdoors anymore, and everybody wears sunscreen. So we've made a deal with the dermatologist, just go outdoors 15 minutes and then put your sunscreen on, because you have to worry about skin cancers being unexposed too long. And you only get 10% of vitamin D from the diet, so you cannot eat enough foods to satisfy how much vitamin D you need on a daily basis.
And so what was the next step? So you got the approval.
Sure.
And you tested everybody, and I know the rule is first do no harm.
Yes, correct.
So how did you start testing it on people, on patients?
Okay, so once we knew exactly, we checked the levels on everybody too. So the average levels in our patients, I looked at the different demographics. The lowest vitamin D levels were in African-American women, which had a level about 9.8 nanograms per milliliter. Federal government states that normal vitamin D level is 30 nanograms per milliliter. So the average African-American lady was 9.8. That's nowhere near 30. The next lowest group was African-American males. They were about 12. And then the other two groups were the Caucasian males and females. They were around 18. So we know from previous research that once your vitamin D level gets below 18 nanograms per milliliter, your risk of death goes up 30% from all causes. So if you come in a hospital, you have a stroke, a heart attack, you have a traumatic brain injury, you have sepsis, if your vitamin D level is below 18 and stays there, your risk of death goes up 30% just from that alone. So I said, you can basically lower somebody's mortality rate 30% just by getting their vitamin D level above normal. And so we also plotted a graph to our chart where we looked at the different effects of vitamin D. So we know that from our research that when people's vitamin D levels got below 13, between that 18 to 13 range, that our mortality rate just went up through the roof, regardless of what the cause was. And so after patients got above 18 and started getting above 30, the mortality rate went down tremendously. And so we knew for a fact that this stuff is associated with increased mortality rate when your vitamin D level is real low, and longer hospital stays, longer ICU stays, and just a whole bunch of other problems and complications. And so we plotted a graph, and then we know once your vitamin D level gets above 40, you basically almost have zero mortality. I don't think we've had a single person in our ICU to die with a vitamin D level less than 30 over the, like, 12 years we've been doing research.
Wow. That is amazing. So let me see if I understand what you're saying. You're saying when people come in, regardless of the reason, you know, or why they're coming to the hospital or how sick they are, if their vitamin D level is below 13, their chances of dying from whatever cause is much higher.
Yes,
than
correct.
If they have a higher vitamin D level when they come in. So
yes,
vitamin D works sort of across the board.
Yes.
In helping you survive whatever it is that's wrong with you.
That's totally correct. Yes, so in that 13 to 18 range, it helps you survive whatever disease
wow.
process that you may have. Because remember, it stimulates your immune system, so you need a strong immune system. So it basically makes your immune system a lot stronger, so your immune system can fight off any type of infection, viruses, bacteria, cancer, or whatever disease that you may have, and it decreases the inflammatory response because everything, all disease is mostly associated with inflammation. You have acute inflammation and you have chronic inflammation. Acute inflammation is what helps a wound or surgeon wound heal when you operate on a patient. You notice initially the wound is angry red, then over a period of time it gets back to normal looking in about a year. So acute inflammation is good, but chronic inflammation is bad. So most of the diseases that we know of mankind are associated with chronic inflammation.
Like what diseases are you talking about?
Any diseases of aging, heart attacks, strokes, cancers, arthritis, joint swelling, joint problems, dementia, Alzheimer's, basically chronic kidney disease, almost any disease that you can think of.
Well, is the result of inflammation? Wow.
Yes, inflammation and free radical formation. Once your body metabolizes food and just going through the daily processes every day, you produce a lot of free radicals. Free radicals are unpaired electrons on the outer shell of molecules, a little small at the molecular level. So molecules are like human beings. They like to be paired. So when these electrons have unpaired electrons, they go out and steal electrons from your DNA and from your mitochondria, which is a powerhouse of the cell. It's sort of like when you bite an apple and you place an apple on a desk, what happens to that apple? You come back several hours later, that apple has rusted. That's oxidation. So that's what happens to our body with the free radicals produced. In terms of the apple, it turns that apple brown, and whereas with humans it turns us gray. We start graying as we age because of oxidation, basically.
Hmm. I never knew that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Chronic inflammation, oxidation are the two worst culprits in your body. So you want to keep those under wraps. It's kind of like washing your car. If you put two Ferraris outdoors and just left them there and washed one and waxed it every week and you did nothing to the other one, just left it to the elements, the snow, the rain, which one of those cars is going to look better a year later? Even though they're the exact same age, one car is going to look brand new. The other car is going to look aged because you didn't have any wax on it or you didn't wash it. So basically wax serves as kind of, that's what vitamins kind of do, kind of serves as a protective coat or layer or keeps things from aging as fast. We all going to age, but you just don't age as fast once you take, you know, antioxidants and things that decrease chronic inflammation.
Well, we certainly want to slow it down. That's,
yes.
That's for sure. That is certainly true. So now you mentioned 13 and 18 as being kind of bad numbers. What's a good number that we should strive to be at? I mean, I'm not talking about when you're sick, but just to maintain being healthy. Where should our levels be?
Well, it depends. Each person is different, number one. And so I think the problem or the debate they're having with vitamin D research, most physicians don't understand that that level is different for each person because each person has different height, weight, sizes, and it depends on your metabolism of things and what disease process you have. For example, just to be normal, healthy, walking around, you need to have your vitamin D level at least 40 at the minimum. And the federal government level is at 30 nanograms per milliliter. But at 40 nanograms per milliliter, you get maximum bone density. So that would be important for a patient with, osteoporosis. So if I have weak bones or frequent fractures, I definitely need to keep my level above 40. And you get maximal muscle contraction at 40 nanograms per milliliter also. So if I'm a person that's falling all the time, you know, in the nursing home, so I need stronger muscles. So it'll make my muscles and my bones stronger, so I should have less frequent falls. Also, that's important for athletes also because if I'm an athlete, I want maximal muscle contraction, which means I should be able to run faster, jump a little higher, and sustain prolonged muscle activity over a longer period of time. And I should get injured less. And my bones should be stronger, and I should have fewer fractures, fewer sprains, and all that. At 50 nanograms per milliliter, you get maximal stimulation of your immune system, and you decrease your inflammatory response system. So your immune system really doesn't kick in until you get above 50. So if I have a bad infection or something, I definitely need my vitamin D level above 50. And then in some disease processes, I've had to go as high as like 70 to 80 on some patients to get the proper response. So you just can't say there's one magical number. But the lowest number I would suggest would be 40 to 50 range. And so all animals in nature, if you look at everything makes vitamin D, should tell you how important it is. All plants make vitamin D. They make D2. And all animals make vitamin D. We make D3. So all plants and animals, every living thing on this planet, you know, needs vitamin D to live or survive. So that should tell you how important it is, or hormone D. And all animals in nature, if you went out on the Serengeti and captured a giraffe or something and checked its vitamin D level, all animals usually run between 50 to 55. So I think Mother Nature is a lot smarter than us. So that's for a healthy individual that's not sick. 50 to 55 is out, but if you're sick or injured or something, you know, sometimes you have to push it a lot higher. So there's no one magical number. You just need to know the ranges and what you need it for. So it does different things at different concentrations. So at above 40, you have maximum bone density, but it doesn't affect your immune response system. So if I did research and said, well, vitamin D doesn't work, and all my patients' vitamin D level is at 30, it's not going to work because it's not at 50, so it's not stimulating the immune response system. I may not have as many fractures, but it's not going to do anything for the immune response system.
I see. So now what do you recommend? Now you mentioned D2, and mm-hmm. you also mentioned D3. So what's the difference? What do I need, and what should I be taking? I don't mean the dosage necessarily, but should I be taking D2 or D3?
We're humans, we're animals, so we make the D3 form. Plants make D2. So the D3 is you absorb that 87% better than you do the D2. Usually the people that love D2 are the people that don't eat any meat products. And so I explained to them that it's not as you don't get the same absorption as you would with the D3.
I see. So is it enough to take, you know, supplements from, you know, wherever, Walmart or Kmart, whatever?
That's what I do. I take supplements. First thing I do, I get up in the morning, I take a multivitamin and a vitamin D3. Because you need it. You need it every day. And it's important, like I said, it controls like 10% of your DNA. That's very important. So anything that controls my DNA, if I'm low in it, that means my DNA is not functioning proper.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Now, I know that you spoke at the United Nations recently. Mm-hmm. Was there an interest in other countries about your research or... You know, tell me about that.
I think they were mesmerized or shocked, you know, because it's like they had no idea. They'd never heard anything how vitamin D can affect the whole nation, the country, the world, or the World Health Organization. So they had no clue. And so if you're a poor developing country and you have a lot of infectious diseases, just by getting the vitamin D levels up, you can cut out a lot of sickness, a lot of illness. Because remember I said once your vitamin D level gets in the 13 to 18 range, your immune response system doesn't work, your inflammatory response system is out of control. And so you have healthier bones and stronger muscles. So healthy people cost the government less. Unhealthy people call the government, state, city, or institution or organization more money. And so there's been research to show that people that have low vitamin D levels are sick and have more days absent from work a year. And so actually your insurance is going to be higher. So basically I've estimated just by if we got everybody's vitamin D level just above 40, we can probably save like $1 trillion worldwide every year. You know, just, and that's a conservative estimation. And so in the United States alone, we can probably save over $800 billion a year if we got everybody's vitamin D level above 40. You would see decreased readmissions to hospitals. You'll see decreased falls, decreased infections, and a lot of things. So we can save a lot of money with that alone. And so you cut health care costs, and then you could use that money to build up your industry, hire people, do jobs, build the infrastructure, and you know, do a whole host of things. So healthy people pay taxes, they're working, they're not as injured, they're not as sick. You can cut your Medicare, Medicaid bills, and yeah, more people paying into Social Security. So the system will feed itself and is relatively cheap or inexpensive way to solve a lot of issues or problems we're facing today.
Wow. So, Will, from the time that you started to now, do you see where do you see us? And I mean not just the United States, but, you know, everybody at in terms of vitamin D. Do you think that there's a lot more interest, or are we still kind of lagging behind, like, oh, we need to do more research? I mean, where do you think things are now?
I think we're still lagging behind. The World Health Organization just released a report in which they stated that up until 2050, they still expect to see a lot of mineral and vitamin deficiencies because we're lagging behind. Out of all the things that they listed that should be targets, I think there's not a single nation on the country, on the planet, that's reaching all those targets for, like, minerals and vitamins and stuff. So we still have a lot of work to do and a long ways to go. So we need to explain to our elected officials and at every level, the state, national, international level, that, you know, this is a major problem. This is the 800-pound elephant in the living room. So you cannot have a healthy society without addressing the most common nutritional deficiency in the world. So by conservative estimation, over 1 billion people on the planet are vitamin D deficient, and that's a conservative estimation using 30 nanograms per milliliter. But we know 30 nanograms per milliliter is not where you should be. You should be above 40, 50 range, just like other animals. I think Mother Nature's a lot smarter than human beings and governments.
Right. So we should listen, right?
Yes, we should.
Very important. Well, believe it or not, we're almost at the halfway mark. So okay. We're going to take a quick pause for a station identification. And when we come back, I want to ask you about your work with athletes and
sure.
Some of the other cases that you've seen at Grady that have received a lot of national and international attention. So we will be back in 1 minute and a half.
Okay.
All right, thanks.
Thanks. Lit up, in case you didn't hear it, here it is again. Oh.
Like me, anybody needing fear to leave?
Oh, yeah.
If you don't know how to say it, sing along with me. Sing fear you don't own me. There ain't no room in this story. And I ain't got time for you telling me what I'm not. Like you know me. Well, guess what? I know who I am. I know I'm strong, brave, and I am free. Got my own identity. So clear, you will never be welcome here.
Whoa. We are back with, this is Carol Moulton, Tea Time with Carol, and we are back with Dr. L. Ray Matthews, where we are dissecting vitamin D and finding out all what the big deal is about vitamin D and why it is so necessary for us to really keep up, have our levels checked, and really be on top of this if we want to be in optimal health, not just for right now, but, you know, preventing things that can occur as we age. So, Dr. Matthews, I wanted to ask you about, you mentioned athletes.
Yes.
And I know you did, well, first of all, let me say this. I know that there has been a lot of attention lately on professional athletes and the concussions and the really traumatic injuries, you know, when somebody breaks their leg now on the field, they don't just break their leg, you know, they're the bones are now coming out of their leg, you know,
yes,
I mean, they're,
yes,
they're really, really horrible. Is any of that attributed to a low vitamin D levels?
Yes, it is, because you need vitamin D to make strong bones. What vitamin D does, it absorbs calcium into the body. You can't absorb as much calcium if you're vitamin D deficient. So calcium is needed to make strong bones. You also need phosphorus and mag and other things, but calcium is the main thing. So if you're vitamin D deficient, you're going to have weak bones. And so I call athletes of today, I say they have big muscles and weak bones. And your skeletal system is used for locomotion. So without a good, strong skeletal system, I mean, you're not good for anything. So remember that your skull is also a bone. And what do Rams do? They butt heads all day. They don't get concussions and they don't get headaches. They keep butting heads. So the thicker your skull is or the thicker your bone is, that energy or kinetic energy gets transmitted through the bone and it doesn't reach the soft tissue of your brain. I remember when we were kids growing up, we used to play football in the streets without helmets and knee pads, and we would play and keep playing all day. And our vitamin D levels were higher because we were outdoors all day, and it was before the days of sunscreen. And so we did not get injured as much in terms of bones sticking out of the skin because we had stronger bones and higher vitamin D levels. Over the last 30 years, vitamin D levels has declined. So if they've declined, the number of concussions has gone through the roof.
Wow, that's terrible. But you did, I understand you did a study with a school in, I think it was in Mississippi.
It was in Atlanta, Martin Luther King Junior High School in Lathonia, Georgia, suburb of Atlanta.
Okay. Would you talk a bit about what you did in that study and what the results were?
Started in 2011 working with the parents at Martin Luther King Junior High School. So, you know, at the high school level, you have to, in whatever level you have in dealing with kids, you have to go through the parents and the coaches and everything, the administration. So I did vitamin D lecture to the parents of the football team and the athletic department over there, the coaches and administrators. And so the parents help design and lead this program, and they basically help administer and do things, and then they have to sign a consent form, and they're explained all the risks and benefits and everything and stuff. And so showing them how it helps kids, because 58 million kids in the United States are vitamin D deficient. And we're seeing more kids with all these concussions, even at the high school, junior high level, they're getting concussions. And recently, even with autopsies in a few high schoolers, they found out they had stage 1 CTE. So you do not have to get a concussion that totally knocks you out in order to have damage. Just repetitive hitting of the head produces that chronic inflammation I was talking about earlier. And so over a period of time, your brain ages from that of like an 18-year-old to like a 60 or 70-year-old. And then by the time you're 30 years old, you got the brain of an 80, 90-year-old. So what vitamin D does, it's one of the most powerful anti-inflammatory agents on the planet, and is also an antioxidant. So it decreases chronic inflammation, it decreases the swelling in your brain, and so therefore, remember I told you it's like the two cars, one with the wax on it and the other one without the wax, which one is age faster? So the brain that's been taking vitamin D is going to have a stronger skull and less inflammation, and it's going to not as age as fast as another kid the exact same age has been getting hit, but it's not taking vitamin D.
Wow. And you mentioned CTE stage one. What is that?
Chronic traumatic encephalopathy. That's basically like repetitive hits to the head over, most kids start playing football at, what, 5, 6 years old?
Yeah.
And then if you make it all the way to the NFL, 35 years old, that's 30 years of getting hit or getting subconcussive hits to the head. So imagine a brain has been hit, you know, 30 times and thousands of times a year. You're going to have all type problems. And so it is a diagnosis that can only be made by autopsy. So you can't diagnose it. Yeah. So you can see the symptoms of it. Like a person with multiple concussions, we know they start having memory loss. Some of them have blurred vision. They have mood changes. They have headaches. And those are some of the symptoms. But this is a diagnosis. We do not have any markers or any blood tests or any x-rays that we can do to diagnose it. It has to be diagnosed by autopsy.
Wow. I think they mentioned that in the autopsy of that. I can't remember his name, but he played for the Patriots, and he ended up in prison.
The tight end from Miami.
Mm-hmm.
His name is escaping me at this moment.
Mm-hmm.
I know who you're talking about exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did have stages of CTE. Mm-hmm.
Wow. So, you know, it seems a little barbaric that we are willing to sacrifice our young men. A young man for, you know, for this sport.
Mm-hmm.
What, you know, where are you on this? What should we be doing, you know?
That's why I started, you know, the vitamin D. I mean, I'm a trauma surgeon, so we're into prevention, and so that's what I do. You know, my patients are usually, in the hospital, are usually a lot worse. I see people that have been shot in the head, brain tissue oozing out and all kinds of things, or a lot of blood in the head. So a concussion is nothing but a mild form of a traumatic brain injury. So I usually see them on the other end of the scale, just the worst of the worst.
Right.
So we started using the vitamin D in our trauma patients with these severe brain injuries, and these were people that most of them, the neurosurgeon said, had no chance of survival, and a lot of them walked out of the hospital. And after, you know, being on courses of vitamin D. So I said if it works in the severe traumatic brain injuries, it should also work in the mild traumatic brain injuries or concussions that football players are getting. So on the question of football that you asked about, I grew up playing football. I'm from Mississippi, the Deep South, so it's like a religion in the Deep South, football. And what's that?
I said I know at Ole Miss it is.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'm an Ole Miss grad, SEC football, so it's like a religion. And so my thing is I don't think football is going anywhere. I love football, and so my thing is let's make it safe. So basically by giving these kids vitamin D and even adults taking vitamin D, it lessens the symptoms. You know, would it totally eliminate it? No. It just lessens the risk of you getting it as severely or as bad or as early. And so it makes a big difference because kids that I work with at MLK, they were more concerned about playing time than they were about a concussion. I think the first year I worked with them, they didn't have any concussions, period, zero. So there were 85 football players. They played, I think, 13 games that year plus, you know, summer practice. And so you're talking about a football team that goes a whole year with no concussions. And out of that, over the 6 years I worked with them, over 100 kids got scholarships to play football at the college level, over $100 million in total scholarships. And right now there are currently 6 kids from MLK in the NFL.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
That is amazing. So, well, I see it just pays to, you know, get on it early and stay on it. You know?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. I'd like to ask you about a couple of cases that you had. I know that there was Fox News did a segment on this young woman. I think she's 17 years old, cheerleader, who was in a very, very bad car accident and recovered. She was one of your patients. Can you talk a little bit about that and what happened? And I know her mother was on you know, they interviewed her mother as well, who was a nurse, and she had quite a bit of response to that as well. Can you talk a bit about that?
Yeah, that was a very special case. Her mother was actually a pediatric ER nurse, so she very well understood, you know, what was going on here. So the young lady was 17 years old. She had just been worn like the head cheerleader. She was driving home in her SUV, hit a pothole at approximately 70 miles an hour. She was ejected from the vehicle. And so when she hit the ground, she had her seatbelt on, but she was still ejected. She hit the ground and started seizing, and so she was airlifted to Grady by helicopter. So when she arrived in the emergency room, she was in bad straits and stuff, you know, not moving, not doing anything, basically in a coma type. And she had seizures. Those are bad signs. So after we scanned her head, she had an injury called diffuse axonal injury. So diffuse axonal injury is just like somebody takes some shears and start cutting some hedges and just don't cut them evenly. And so basically what diffuse axonal injury is, like your brain cells or neuron cells are just ripped, or they're just sheared or severed, you know, like you just sever some cords. So 90% of these patients, 50% of these patients, you know, die at the scene. The other 50%, 90% of them are kind of like in a vegetative state, and the other 10% are like cerebral palsy. So it's usually no good outcome when they have severe diffuse axonal injury. So she was the only child. Her parents had her by artificial insemination, so she was a miracle child. And to be told that your only child has no chance for survival is devastating. And you had to work so hard to have her. And so I convinced the neurosurgeons to just put a boat in her head so we can relieve some of that pressure. And but they told them there was no chance. So we started on our vitamin D protocol. 3 days, she was opening her eyes. And about a week and a half, we had transferred her to rehab. And this young lady basically also had a ACL injury. You know, she needed that fixed and had a breastbone fracture. And so she had a whole host of other things. And so fast forward now, she's actually graduated from college, University of Georgia. I think she's a straight-A student, and she's actually working with, I think, children, helping children that have been through traumatic events like she has. So it was a remarkable story. So she had learned how to walk again, basically learned how to talk again. But she's a courageous young lady, and, I mean, very strong, never complained, always had a positive attitude. So actually I learned a lot from my patients, and so they teach me that, you know, some things that you think are problems are not problems.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's amazing that she was able to come back from that. Well, miracle, you know, all the way around. But and it was a blessing that she ended up at Grady as well, because it doesn't sound like the outcome would have been, you know, quite so positive otherwise, you know.
Yeah, it could have been different.
Yeah, wow. There's another one that you've mentioned, when we talked before. I've heard you speak about, this was, I can't remember how this man was injured. I don't know if he parachuted and the parachute didn't open, or if he fell off of a building, but he ended up meeting his wife in this weird kind of way. This is another patient of yours. Do you remember that one?
Yes, he's actually a paratrooper in the military, so he was like recertifying to be to parachute. So his parachute did well, but when he reached 500 feet, the parachute got entangled, and so he tumbled from 500 feet to the ground. So he hit the ground at about 80 miles an hour. Went into cardiac arrest immediately, and it was tragic because both his kids were there, and they were taking pictures. They were like 7 and 6 or something like that. And so he went into cardiac arrest, but fortunate there was a paramedic standing next to his children, and he started CPR and got airlifted to Grady. So basically he was like Humpty Dumpty, broke almost everything in his body. And so he arrived in Grady in cardiac arrest, and so we were able to get him back, get a strong heartbeat. And we had to take him to the operating room immediately to fix and repair a lot of things. And we started him on the vitamin D, you know, because he had broken a lot of bones. And you know, he was in ICU for 3 months. And he basically walked out of the hospital also. He had to go to rehab, you know, for 3 to 6 months. And he had a bad traumatic brain injury also. So with my traumatic brain injury patients, in addition to being on vitamin D, I recommend they do puzzles on the Internet and, you know, word games to get their memory back and, you know, stimulate those neurons. So he met this young lady in England while he was playing on his computer. So she had never been married, and she had given up hope that she would ever get married. So they started communicating on the Internet, and she came to the United States to visit him, and behold, they got married. And, 10 years later, she just sent me a Christmas card saying, you know, they're doing great. And so she also stated in the card, she said, had not we saved her husband before she even knew him, she never would have got married.
Wow.
So, yeah, so we get success stories sometimes. You know, we see a lot of bad stuff, but every now and then we see some good stuff.
Well, that's a sweet one. That one is really, really sweet.
Oh, definitely.
You know?
Definitely.
You know, after something so traumatic, you know, his children being there and,
mm-hmm.
you know, all those things, but it just seemed like there were so many good things in his favor. You know, the paramedic being right there and, you know, being airlifted to Grady again. And, you know, that's wonderful that was such a great outcome. There was another one that you mentioned. I don't know if this guy was using a saw.
Oh, yes. He was using the saw.
Okay.
Yeah, this gentleman is an interesting gentleman. He was using the saw, and the saw kicked back and severed all the blood vessels and all the muscles on the right side of his neck down to his vertebrae. And
wow.
So he was sitting there looking at his vertebrae. So he went into cardiac arrest and once again had to be airlifted to Grady by helicopter. So he went into cardiac arrest on the helicopter. He had lost practically his entire blood volume. The average person has 5 liters of blood in your system. So he had lost all 5 liters and had been replaced. And they got him back after the first cardiac arrest, and then he went into cardiac arrest a second time. So when he arrived at Grady, it was a blood clot about the size of a beach ball on the stretcher as the nurse was doing CPR. And they took him in the operating room, put him on the operating table, and they noticed they did not have a pulse or his pupils were fixing dilated, and heart was not beating anything. So they stopped everything, called it, and or pronounced him dead, had covered him up with the sheets. And so I had come out of another operating room, and said exactly 5 minutes after he arrived, I was finishing up the other case, and I was at the sink scrubbing in. To his case, the nurse told me they had pronounced him. And so I still kept scrubbing in to go look at him. And so as soon as I got in the room, the nurse told me she saw the sheet move a little bit. And so I thought she was being facetious. And she said, no, I actually saw his arm move. And I said, well, maybe it was reflex. So I said, but give me a unit of blood anyway. So I transfused him a unit of blood. His heart started beating. And so he started pouring out blood through his wounds. He had bled out all his blood. And so I had to get my operative team back in, and we repaired all the vessels and muscles and everything else on the right side of his neck, and started him on vitamin D once again. And this gentleman walked out of the hospital about a week and a half later also.
That is amazing. A week and a half, I thought you were going to say months, or, you know,
nope.
He had to go to rehab for 6 months, and, you know,
Yeah, he did have to get a little rehab, you know, in terms of speech therapy and stuff like that. But, you know, he's still able to walk.
Yeah, that in itself, I mean, you know, after such a traumatic injury, wow.
Yeah, we see a lot of things at Grady.
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, those are very memorable. All of those are very memorable cases. And, you know, glad to know that the paratrooper is still doing well and, you know, you hear from him and his wife on a regular basis. And
yes.
I guess it also goes to show is you just never know how things are going to turn out, you know.
You don't.
Never know what blessing may be on the other side of something that looks really, really bad, you know.
A lot of times when I'm taking care of patients like that, I'll tell my residents, this patient's going to survive. They look at me like I'm totally crazy.
Well, I guess you've been doing it long enough that you can, you know, you kind of spot. Do you think a person's outlook has something to do with the outcome as well? How does that play into it?
Well, I'm sure it does. Your outlook on life and having a supportive network helps a lot also. I trained at Mayo Clinic, and, you know, they use music therapy. They have dog therapy, and I'm a big proponent of all that. You'd be amazed if you bring a dog in with somebody that's depressed and how it lifts their spirit because, you know, dogs just love everybody. They don't judge anybody, and just wagging their tail, excited to meet everybody. You'd be amazed at how some of these depressed patients just start smiling, and then they actually look forward to the dogs coming back to visit them, the dog mm-hmm. therapy dogs. And so, yeah, I mean, all that goes into making a spirituality. All that makes a big difference in whether you survive or not.
Wow. So many variables, you know.
Yes,
so
definitely. So it's multifactorial.
Yeah, wow, that's amazing. Well, what would you, you know, if I'm listening for the, you know, and this is the first time I've heard anyone talk about vitamin D, and I don't know where to start. You know, I don't know what to do. This sounds really interesting, but, and I want to, you know, make sure that I'm in optimum health and everything. What would you suggest? Where should I start? Should I go and load up on, you know, go to Walmart and load up on vitamin D? Yeah.
No.
So what should I do?
I would suggest you inform or educate yourself about vitamin D first. I mean, you can Google my name, L.R.A. Matthews, and you'll pull up a lot of articles on vitamin D alone. So always education, knowledge is powerful. And so educate yourself about anything. And so educate yourself first and then start conversations with your physician or your health care provider and ask them to check your levels and see where you are. And that is probably where I would start.
Well, that's a good one.
Yep.
And well, and any I can't think of any other questions for you. I really appreciate the time because I know that you've been traveling and I know that this was, you know, kind of unplanned, you know, not on your schedule for today. So I really appreciate you taking the time to spend and share.
Sure.
You know. And I think that I know I got a lot out of it, and I'm sure our listeners did as well. Anything that you would want to add to what we've covered in terms of, you know, outlook or the future of vitamin D or, you know?
Yes, it's going to be around for a long time. It's not going anywhere. It's a worldwide problem. It's the most common nutritional deficiency in the world, not just the United States. 97% of African Americans are vitamin D deficient, so it's a big problem worldwide with everybody, but it's a bigger problem with African Americans. Since we have pigment or melanin in our skin, that serves as a natural sunscreen. So melanin and sunscreen blocks about 98% of vitamin D production. So darker-skinned people have to stay in the sun 3 to 10 times longer than lighter-skinned people to produce the same amount of vitamin D. So African Americans usually have a vitamin D level 30% lower than Caucasians usually. So that's why you see more heart attack, more strokes, more renal failure, kidney failure, and a lot more chronic diseases in African Americans and stuff. And so it would behoove us to get our vitamin D levels checked. Also, a big area that we're really suffering in is pregnant women. Pregnant ladies have low vitamin D levels because they're trying to feed two people, number one. And then we all know that the African-American women have one of the highest mortality rates, basically, of all industrialized nations in terms of pregnancy, in terms of fetal death and maternal death, you know, because their vitamin D levels are so low. So you need normal vitamin D levels to sustain a healthy pregnancy. And so it makes a difference. So if you want optimal health, you need to take vitamin D, and it helps in everything. So you cannot have optimal health with low vitamin D levels is the bottom line. And it's a hormone, number two.
Right.
Yep.
Can we go back to what you said for a minute? Because I think it's sort of counterintuitive for a lot of folks. I think a lot of folks, me included, would assume that when you're darker, you absorb more vitamin D from the sun. And what I hear you saying is that is not the case?
Yes, it's totally different. You absorb less. So we have to stay in the sun 3 to 10 times longer because we have more melanin or pigment in our skin, and so that protects us. If you're on the equator, having dark skin protects you from skin cancers and skin burn. and sunburn. But, you know, the opposite of that is it takes you longer to make the same amount of vitamin D as somebody with a lot lighter skin.
I see.
So darker-skinned people make it at a slower rate, and then their levels are usually 30% lower.
Wow. That is so interesting because I think I'm not the only one who's always assumed the opposite
has been true,
you know. But that's really, really good to know, you know. And so it's all the more reason why we really need to keep up on what our levels are.
Definitely.
And, you know, making sure that we're in that good, you know, 40 to 50 range.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm, you know, just about everybody I've talked to, my friends who had physicals lately, they've all been talking about vitamin D. And it seems like that is, you know, really, really cutting edge. And I cannot, 10 years ago, I know people were not, you know, into vitamin D the way it becomes such standard. You know, it's become almost standardized now.
I was laughed at. 15 years ago.
Right. Well, you know, they laughed at a lot of, you know, brilliant people, a lot of geniuses. They have been laughed at, and, you know, but the point is, who gets the last laugh, you know?
Yeah.
And I think you definitely do because you've really been in service, you know, with respect to this. I think a lot of folks would have walked away, you know, from the, you know, folks who just thought this is ridiculous, you don't know what you're talking about, and
I got told that too. You don't know what you're talking about.
But you persevered. You continued. You know, you didn't let any of that dissuade you. And so, you know, for all the people that you've helped, you know, me included, we, you know, just thank you for continuing to be there. You know, and always being available. Much appreciated.
Sure.
You know, well, that's about our time. You know,
okay.
I can't believe how fast this hour has gone. But, you know, this has been really critical information that you provided. And I don't know if you know, but we're heard in 167 countries. You know, our program is.
Yeah, I did not know that.
Yeah, so hopefully a lot of this information will be shared and people will begin to, you know, make the connection at all. Next time they go to the doctor, you know, to get their vitamin D levels checked and to start eating maybe a little bit healthier and maybe paying a little bit more attention, you know, to that, and will really, really help a lot of people in the long run.
Oh, definitely will.
Yeah. So, Dr. L. Ray Matthews, I want to thank you sincerely for being a guest, and I want to keep the light on and the door open that you can come back anytime and talk. And I really want to keep up with where you're going, what you're doing. I know you've got some big things, you know, on the way. And as those begin to manifest, I'd like to have you back and talk a bit more about vitamin D because I know that's your passion.
Okay, definitely. It really is.
I know.
Thanks again for having me.
Well, thank you so much, and we'll talk again soon. And to all of our listeners of Tea Time with Carol, thank you so much for hanging with us once again. And remember, as we always tell you, everything you want is on the other side of fear. You all be blessed. We'll see you next week. God bless you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.